Welcome to PM Lessons Learned, a podcast for project managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Increase your PM knowledge, build business relationships, increase your effectiveness, increase your marketability, gain professional support. Join our group and take part in our conference calls. Details at pmlessonslearned.com.
Hello, and welcome to the PM Lessons Learned monthly PMP exam study group conference call and podcast. This is podcast number 113. We're recording this session on the 3rd of February, 2011, and we are totally focused on version 4 of the PMBOK guide. My name is Dana Safford. I'm your host for the PM Lessons Learned monthly PMP exam study group conference calls. I've been a PMP since version 2 of the PMBOK. I'm also a certified ITIL version 3 expert and a Microsoft certified systems engineer. I have over 25 years of project management experience in the IT industry. I work for Hewlett-Packard as a complex problem manager, and in this role, I take a very complex situation that is affecting an HP customer's enterprise production environment, and I manage a project with a virtual team that quickly resolves the issue. So remember, you don't have to have the term project manager in your job title to actually be a project manager. Our presenter for this session is me, and our topic is, what do you mean the PMP exam is changing on August 31st, 2011? The PMP examination's basis on version 4 of the guide to the project management body of knowledge will not change until the year probably 2013, maybe late 2012, early 2013. However, on August 31st, 2011, the PMP exam will change. How can that be? What's with that? What's going on? This month's PM Lessons Learned PMP exam study group conference call focuses on a description of the changes to the PMP exam brought about by the PMI's ongoing role delineation study process. It's also called RDS. Without necessarily changing the underlying content, this process can implement structural changes in many aspects of the PMP certification process. In this session, I hope to provide you with an overview of the exam changes that you can expect and the requirements that can change as well. So if you are planning to sit for the exam in 2011, sit back and I'll help you determine the best time frame for you. I will provide the insight and guidance you need to know so you can build your critical mass and pass the PMP exam on the first attempt. If you haven't already downloaded a PDF copy of this session's presentation, please do so. If you're in the live freece.com virtual meeting room we're in right now and on the bridge, the file is in the lobby. So just click on the lobby link and grab it from there. Or if you are listening to the podcast or don't have access to freece, you can go to our website to find out how to download the file. Go to www.pmlessonslearned.com, and in the left-hand navigation column, you'll see a link to files and presentations. Just follow that link, and it'll take you to where we have a PDF copy of this presentation. And also, you'll see the link for a whole lots of other things in there. The file name for this session is PMLL RDS Changes to the PMP Exam 3-Feb-11. And its title is pretty much the same thing, PMLL RDS Changes to the PMP Exam 3-Feb-11. In the file area in the Yahoo group, you'll also see content from the last year's worth of conference calls, and an updated PMBOK version 4 brain dump is in there as well. If you look in the past monthly PMP Exam Study Group calls folder, you'll find some other files. We've recently cleaned out most of that stuff that was based on version 3 of the PMBOK guide, so what's left there is pretty much all version 4. Also, the internet is a very big place. You can find lots of stuff on the internet. If you choose to use the material from another source, make sure you know it's PMBOK-based. You'll want material based on version 4 of the PMBOK. You should remember there's roughly about a 30% difference from version 3 to version 4, and it's pretty much all in the processes and their ITTOs, or inputs, tools, and techniques, and outputs. And finally, this is the PM Lessons Learned monthly PMP exam study group conference call and podcast. If you are on a shorter time scale and are willing to make a commitment to actively participate and take turns presenting study group material, our weekly PMP exam study group might be the right place for you. If you'd like more information, send an email off to pmpstudy@pmlessonslearned.com, and someone will get back to you. So, we are pmlessonslearned.com, project managers helping project managers to make a difference. Thank you in advance to those participants on this month's live conference call sitting on the bridge with me here, and those who download the podcast as well. So let's get started. I'm going to shift over to the presentation here. We're looking at slide one. First couple of slides are some of our standard things that folks who have been involved in our podcast and our conference calls are familiar with. First is the schedule of what we'll be going through from month to month. This being the first Thursday of the month, we have our PM Lessons Learned PMP Study Group conference call. On the second Thursday of each month, we have our PM Lessons Learned PM Job Shop call, where people who are in transition or need help with job search or resumes and things like that can go to get some help. On the third Thursday of each month, we have our PM Lessons Learned Best Practice conference call. This is where our host and founder, Henry Will, provides presentations on a whole variety of project management topics. If Henry is not doing the presentation, then he's got somebody who's written a book or another practitioner who will be doing the presentation for that month. There's always a lot of good stuff to learn when you attend that call, so please do. We also see there that you can listen to the calls by telephone or download the podcast and the slides by going to www.pmlessonslearned.com. And over in that left-hand navigation column, as I mentioned, you'll see the pointer for that. And please take the time to join our Yahoo and LinkedIn groups. They're aptly titled PM Lessons Learned. So pretty easy to find those guys. I'm going to move to the next slide here. And we're looking at call norms now. I'd like this to be an interactive call, if at all possible. I'd like you to participate. So if you'd like to ask me a question or make a comment, anything along those lines, your lines are muted on the live bridge, so you'll need to do a *6 to unmute your phone, get my attention somehow, and then ask your question. And then when you're done, do another *6 to remute yourself so that we won't talk over each other too awful much. Let me move on to the next slide, and we see our email address that I've mentioned already, but it's pmpstudy@pmlessonslearned.com. Go there for anything you might need. Give any testimonials, anything along those lines, or any volunteers for help. We're always looking for volunteers to do podcasts or webmasters and things along those lines. So let us know if you have an inkling to get involved. I'll move to the next slide, and we have the title for today's session, and that it is the RDS Changes to the PMP Exam, and it is, as I mentioned, the 3rd of February, 2011. Let's move on to the next slide and get into the meat of what we'll be talking about. What the role delineation study tries to do is identify the most current and critical elements of the project management profession. What's really going on? What's cutting edge, if you will? Cutting edge as PMI can be. You know, they're just now getting around to virtual teaming and things along those lines. Many of us have been involved in virtual teams for years and years. They get around to it eventually, but from their point of view, it's what is critical to the profession. That the PMI Project Management Institute conducts roughly every 5 to 7 years. Last time they did it was 2005. And they look at each of their credentials and the requirements around each credential and what do they have to change to make it be more germane to the current timeline that we're in now. You know, what's changed in the profession? What's changed in technology? What's changed in whatever? And do they have to make any changes to anything involved with the certification? Moving on to the next slide. So why do they do all this? And that is because they want to make sure that the credential is really relevant in the day-to-day work that most project managers do. And the other reason why they do it is because they have to. And that is because they have signed up to be accredited under an ISO standard, International Standards Organization, standard 17024. That provides PMI certifications, their credentials, with a differentiator. There's a lot of certifications out there that are not accredited under ISO standards. And this helps to bolster the image, the appeal, or whatever, of all of the PMI certifications, credentials, and such. The accreditation also requires PMI to do this study. They have to make sure that they don't do it once and then just let things lie for years and years and years. So they make sure that there is some updates from time to time. Moving on to the next slide. So what is an ISO standard? Why do we care? As I mentioned, it's the International Organization for Standardization. You name whatever it is going to be, they have a standard for it. A lot of standards in construction, electronics, computers, telephony, all kinds of different things. They're just the grand standards keepers. And the one that the PMI has signed up to be credited under. It was released in 2003, as I mentioned, it's 17024, and it governs the personnel certification process around the world. If you want to be accredited under the standard, no matter where you are, no matter what technology you use, this is what you have to pay attention to, and it defines thresholds. You have to do an examination for the most part. So what are you going to examine? And it says you must examine the competencies. You can examine plenty of other things if you'd like, but they're really shooting for the competencies involved in making sure that if you're having a test or something like that, that the recipient of your certification knows what they're talking about, knows the jargon, knows how to apply things. That's what it's all about. So it's the knowledge, the skills, and the personal attributes, if there are any. If there is an examination, it must be independently administered. And that's why we have a whole lot of third-party folks involved in the examination here in the U.S. It's Prometric. There's plenty of examination certification sites around the world and such. But it's independent for the most part. And it must be a valid test of the competence. Make sure that folks just can't do a rote memory, if you will, brain dump, the bad connotation of a brain dump, which is somebody with a photographic memory takes a test and dumps it out and goes and sells it. They want to really make sure that there's competence involved here, and where that competency is really the ability to apply the knowledge and skills and whatever attributes you're testing for. So that's why the PMP exam is as long as it is, has as many questions as it does, things along those lines, because it is a worldwide standard that is accredited. And a lot of standards you find from other companies aren't worldwide accredited under the standard. So maybe it's a 40-question test lasting 30 minutes, something along those lines, and it's only valid for that company. You know, it doesn't matter if it's worldwide or not. It's just that one company that cares about it. So I'm going to move on to the next slide and talk about who was involved in this whole RDS thing. They put out a solicitation on their website and some emails or whatever and found 3,000 PMP credential holders, PMP certified project managers, and asked them a bunch of questions, got them together, saw what they were seeing around the world in the various places. And most of them were, well, half of them were from North America, but there was a bunch from Asia Pacific. Europe had 17%, Latin American Caribbean, the smallest amount at 8%. But from around the world in all different industries, all different job descriptions, job level things along those lines, they tried to get a very broad smattering of credential holders that could participate in this and really bring the current set of knowledge, the current set of practices from wherever they happen to be, because obviously things can be very different from one part of this flat world to the other. It's only flat as far as certain things go, but there are significant differences that have to be paid attention to as well. Most of the participants had an average of about 11 years of experience as a project manager. Some had a whole lot more. Some were newly certified, but their opinions are just as valid as someone who's been around for 30 years when it comes to project management, because they have a different point of view, and that's what they tried to pull into this whole thing, is the point of view involved. So I'm going to move to the next slide, and let's talk about what can change. And it turns out there's a whole lot of things. If you are listening to the podcast or read down through this list, because there's a ton of stuff here that can change. The PMP education requirements can be changed. The work history requirements can be changed. The guide to the project management body of knowledge itself can change and often does every few years. But sometimes they coincide, as you'll see in a moment. The number of exam questions can change. It's been the way it is for a while, but they can change that if they choose to. The duration time of the exam can change. The content, the question content can change. The passing score can change. And finally, once you become certified, you have to recertify right now every 3 years, but the requirements of their ongoing continuing certification requirements can often change as well. If something is strategic, architectural, whatever, that forces the PMI to make those changes. So all those types of things can change. And on the next slide, we've got a bit of a ziggy-zaggy timeline here to show you, just to give you an idea of what changed when and how often things happen. As I mentioned, it's every 5 to 7 years. Sometimes they do it more frequently than others. But we can go all the way back to 2001. And in 2001, the education requirements were changed to try to standardize the way educations are applied around the world. Up until then, it was kind of more an American thing, and they changed it around to be more worldly, if you will. And then in 2005, they had a change where the work history requirements changed. That time window, if you will, for work history bumped around a little bit so that it encompassed more years and more active time inside of that horizon, that eight-year horizon. And then move over to the right one, and we see that the question content changed in 2005. They started applying a bit more of some content changes there. And then also in 2005, the passing exam score changed. It went up to a bit over 80%, like 82%, something along those lines. You have to have 143 questions correct in order to pass the exam. That didn't go over so well because they found that once they implemented that, this is with version 3 of the PMBOK, a whole lot of people started failing the exam, a whole lot more, higher percentage failed the exam than they had anticipated. And they did a big study and found, well, maybe if we dropped it from 143 to 141, that'll be all we need to do. So they dropped the passing score to 141 after a few months. And lo and behold, nothing happened. Pretty much the same number of failures with the score because it was a bit too high. And that's when they went down, or why they went down, to the current 106 questions that you have to get right out of the 175 that are scored questions. A lot of times people ask, well, what's your passing grade? Well, PMI doesn't like to tell you anymore, but there's documentation out there you can find that says 106 questions is the passing score. That's what I tell folks in my study groups. You need to at least make sure that you're relatively confident of at least those 106 questions. And, of course, you have 25 questions that are pre-test questions. We'll get into that in a moment. So you really need to worry more about 136 questions that you need to pay attention to and be correct in. And that's all part of to go to the back of my brain dump that's in the file area. Is a whole scenario of keeping track of how many questions, the right number you need to do, so that as you're sitting for the exam, if you take a couple seconds, not only mark the questions, but on a separate piece of paper, mark down how many you're not so sure of, and if you're choosing between one best out of three answers, best out of two answers, whatever, it can give you a clue as to whether you're going to be above the threshold in order to pass the exam. So they went through a lot of stuff in 2005 with the score. And then over to the right in 2009, the PMBOK changed. Everybody remembers that. I think it was June 30th of 2009, they went to version 4 of the PMBOK. So the exam had to change because it had a new base, and it's still there now. That's going to carry on for quite a while because they're just now getting version 5 starting to roll out, working with various people to refix, if you will, to respin the PMBOK. So it's going to be a while before we see that. I'm sure anyone testing at least through most of 2012 is going to be safe. Maybe toward the end of 2012, you'll at least see the announcement that version 5 is out there. And I don't expect they'll base the exam on version 5 until 2013, but they could surprise us, see what happens. So that brings us to today, the last bullet down there, last bubble down there, is what's happening with the exam in August. And to give you a little hint of what's happening, they're going to be merging some domains. That standard I talked to you about a while back, and I'll get to it in a moment, talks about domains. So they're going to be doing some merging of domains is what's going to happen. So let's move to the next slide and talk about some of that. So this time, what they've decided with the IDF study that only the exam is going to change. And what they're going to do is once they looked at the results of the study, they created an updated description of the professional role of a project manager. They did all the statistics to make sure that what they identified was statistically significant and relevant and all that stuff. They have to base it on some sound mathematics to make sure that what you're doing is makes sense. And what they decided to do is change roughly 30% of the exam content. So all those multiple choice questions is what will change. Well, actually not all of them, 30% of those multiple choice questions will change. But the exam will still be based on PMBOK version 4. That's still the base of the knowledge. What you'll see they're going to change in a moment was pretty easy to roll through the rest of the exam. Pretty good way to make some changes. It will be based on PMBOK version 4 for, as I mentioned, throughout all of this year for sure, all of 2012 most likely, and toward the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, is when we need to really worry about the exam going to version 5. So you have plenty of time, if you're studying, to work through your studying and do it all with PMBOK version 4. So let's move to the next slide, and we'll talk about the actual changes now. And on the first tier there, you see, is they have these things called domains, as I mentioned, as part of the standard. Domain 6 happens to be what you will understand to be the professional and social responsibility content area. It's that extra little piece that when you fill out your PMP application, you've got to check off that you've read that and you will agree to be bound by that and the way you do things from an ethical, a social, and a professional point of view. And they used to test that separately. It used to be a separate section that was graded separately, and on your grade report you would see that piece, professional and social responsibility, and you'd see whether you were proficient in that or not. The way the exam reports work now is you see each of the domains. The standard calls them domains, the PMI calls them process groups, but still the same thing. Since we're talking about the standard, we keep it with domains, but you can call it process groups as well. It shows you each one of those, whether you're proficient or not proficient. Doesn't give you a numerical grade, as I mentioned a few slides back, but it'll tell you whether you were proficient or not. So in the odd chance, obviously, if you were not a PM Lessons Learned participant, you may not pass on the first try. We'd always love everybody to, but we strive to make sure everybody passes on the first attempt here. So you will. But if you happen not to pass, you look at your grade report, and you'll see that you're not proficient in executing, or something along those lines. So you go back and you study some more on executing, those types of things, is where all this comes from. And so what they're going to do is they're going to integrate, in the bottom box down there, they're going to integrate all of the thoughts, the concepts, the questions, if you will, of the professional and social responsibility content area into the rest of the exam. So what will happen is you won't see separate questions saying, is this ethical, is this not ethical? It would present you with a quickie situation, what would you do? And you have to pick, out of the four choices, the most ethical answer, the most professionally responsible answer. That won't be a standalone question. What they'll do is they're going to merge that in with something, one of the other scenarios. So they might have given you a scenario where you've had to do something around project initiation. And maybe there's something going on with the number of projects that are being considered for implementation. And maybe there'll be an ethical situation that they will present as one little twist in the question. And you're going to give the choice, maybe you're going to hide some detail from the approval body so that your project will be chosen over theirs. Well, that's obviously not a very ethical thing. So that's the type of thing you're going to see in the new exam. They're just going to take those little ethical and professional and social twists, merge them into the body of the question, and one of the answers that you'll have to pick on will not only be correct from a business point of view, perhaps, or a numerical point of view, if it's a scheduling or a financial question, but there'll be an ethical bent to the answer as well that you have to pay attention to, and choose the correct combination of professional, social responsibility, and I'll call it hard content, if you will, for a schedule, for cost, for whatever else. And that's how they're going to do it. And they're doing that because they feel that all of this stuff, all the ethical and professional and social considerations, are just so tightly woven into the day-to-day stuff that goes on in a project manager's role, that it's not something you really can consider separately, is the point that we're trying to drive at. And I have to agree with them. You know, I don't necessarily sit down and consider all the ethics separately of the things that I may or may not do. It's all just woven in, and it's, oh yeah, and one extra thing to tick off in my checklist or my process sheet or just the way I happen to be working something in a call or whatever else. So since that is integrated into our day-to-day project management responsibilities in our role, why shouldn't the test be the same way? So that's what they're going to do. They're going to roll that all together. Moving to the next slide, let's look at the process groups and the domains that are laid out. We basically have a table here. In the left-hand column, you see the domains. As I mentioned, the ISO standard lists each thing that you are trying to test or certify people in as a domain. And then on the right-hand column, the PMI's process groups. So you see all the process groups here, all six of them, because this is the way the exam is set up right now. And so we have syrup of ipecac. If you're studying, you may know the mnemonic for the process group, syrup of ipecac, the IPECC, initiating, planning, executing, monitoring, and controlling. For the mnemonic, you can leave out the M because you know controlling is there. Closing. And then there's professional social responsibility. It's redded out, if you will, colored differently, because that's what's going. And so let's move to the next slide and look at the old domain mix and let you know that if you weren't aware, these are the rough percentages of the questions in each area, each one of those domains. Process groups, we start roughly the 1 o'clock position. We see that questions involving initiating a project took up roughly 11% of the PMP exam as it stands today. Planning's 23, executing's 27, monitoring and controlling is 21, and closing is 9. And professional and social responsibility is also 9. So those are the 6 domains, process groups that make up the domain. The red one is professional social responsibility. It's going away. That's why it's red. Down the bottom, we see, for those who were not aware, of those 200 questions on the test, as I mentioned earlier, only 175 of them are actually scored. The other 25 are pretest questions. They're always making up new questions. You can actually submit questions to the PMI if you want. You want to sit and write one up and submit it to their approval board, and it takes a while for it to roll through the process, but you could wind up with one of your own questions on the PMP exam. They do remix and re-roll the exam every now and again. It's still based on version 4, but every now and again they pull a new batch of 175 real questions, and that makes up the exam that you, Susan Smith, are sitting for, or something along those lines. And those 25 pretest questions are there just to see how people respond. Do most people get them right? Do most people get them wrong? What happens with it? And they also look at what answers are chosen and figure out, well, maybe they have to tweak it here, tweak it there. And then once everything is all laid out and they like it, they might actually roll it into the exam. They'll retire an old question. And so that way they have I'll call it a steady stream. I have no clue as to how many questions are in the input queue, if you will, that are being validated, qualified, whatever, but 25 of them end up on the exam. So they were scored on only the 175. Let's move on to the next slide and see what the new mix is going to be. With the new mix, starting up at the 1 o'clock position on the pie chart here, initiating is now going to be 13% of the questions. So they're bumping all of them up. Obviously, if you're taking 9% out, you got to bump everything else up. So they bumped everything up by a little bit. As I mentioned, initiating is 13%. Planning is 24% now. Executing is going to be 29%. Monitoring and controlling is going to be 25%. And closing is going to be 9%. So you can see in the middle there is where they spent most of their 9% that they had to apportion across all of the process groups, all of the domains. And the number of questions stays the same. They're not changing the number of the questions at all. So it's still 175 real questions, 25 pretests for a total of 200 questions over the 4 hours. Moving on to the next slide. So here's where we get to the meat of the reason why some of you are here. What should you do? You're getting ready to take the test. What should you pay attention to? Well, if we look out on the left-hand side of this graphic, if you can, you should really sit for the exam before the 31st of August. That's going to be I'll call it the easiest or the best path forward. Your situation is certainly going to vary, so maybe it isn't easy or fast for you. But the reason why you do that, moving to the second box, is you've collected a whole bunch of stuff. You've participated in study groups. You've gone to the internet. You've bought books. You've done whatever else that you've done, and you've got a whole mass of stuff that you're studying. Well, all that stuff is still going to be valid for the next couple of months. But after the 31st of August, they'll still be valid, but the exam question content will be different. You're not going to see those ethical, those professional and social responsibility questions separate anymore. While you can still study them, but if you're the kind of person that has to only study the exact type of question you're going to see, it's going to be a little more difficult for you after August 31st. Still doable, still imminently doable, but it'll be a titch different. So if you've amassed all of this volumes and volumes of stuff, this critical mass of information, the best way to make use of it all is to test before August 31st. And then you don't have to worry about what's not valid anymore and whatever. And the other thing to pay attention to with the third box on here is if you're going to test before August 31st, don't schedule a test for August 30th. Why? Because everybody and his brother is going to be doing the same thing. And you might see some no vacancy signs in the test centers. We saw the exact same thing when version 4 rolled out back in 2009. Anyone trying to schedule an exam in the last couple of weeks had a difficult time because everybody was trying to get in there and get things done and get tested before the exam rolled to the PMBOK version 4 base. So do what you can to get it done sooner. You know, maybe buckle down a little bit more. It's only the beginning of February as we're recording this podcast, so you still got plenty of time. It takes roughly 3 to 5 months is what the average person spends working through the process from start to finish. So do what you can to make things happen so that you're totally done. Maybe you're going to test in July or the beginning of August would be a really good time to test. And your probability of seeing an open vacancy sign in the Prometric Center or whatever center you happen to use is going to go up considerably as we approach the 31st of August. And it depends on where you live, too. I'm right outside of Boston. So right outside of Boston, I have a half a dozen different centers I could go hit within, a half hour, 45-minute, hour drive. I've got quite a few choices. I prefer the one that's a mile and a half from my house. But if I have to drive further, I can, and for my other certifications, I have done that, driven to other places because Prometric was full for what I was trying to do. Other people don't have that type of luxury that I do. So if you're in a place that on a good month, it takes 2 weeks to schedule a test, then you want to make sure that you schedule that test early enough that you can successfully sit for it and leave some time so that if you have to retest, you can get that retest in there as well. I have a motto with all the certifications I have and I try to relate to other people, is test early and often. Once you've finished your boot camp or your class or whatever, don't wait 2 weeks to take the test. Test right away. Test a couple of days after the class is over. And if you don't pass it, then you'll at least know what you've been able to accomplish. And then go study that piece a bit more and retest again within another couple of days. Don't lose that critical mass of knowledge. Get it done right away. So set up your test for, May, June, July. And that way, if you do not pass for whatever reason, you've got time to retest and still do it before the August 31st rush. Okay, and moving on to the next slide. If you are stuck for whatever reason, time, location, propensity, lack of motivation, whatever the case may be, so that you are not going to be testing before August 31st, you're going to be testing after August 31st, are you really in a whole lot of trouble? Are you really in deep whatever? No, you're really not, because you already know what's going to happen. You know that they're going to change roughly 30% of the test. They're only pulling 9% of the questions out. So how are they changing 30% of the test? They're rolling the professional and social responsibility into other questions. So they're just going to re-spin the questions a mite. So you won't see that specific professional domain 6 question, but what you will see is, as I mentioned, a social or a professional or an ethical bent to the rest of them. So it's not the end of the world by any means. If you've been studying, you already know the stuff. It's just if you happen to rely on practice tests, be they online or paper or whatever, those will need to change if you're going to study from those things. And the registered education providers and the book authors and everyone now are just starting to figure out how they're going to change their material, because the PMI just released the specification to those folks for sale. PMI doesn't do anything for free, so they've sold the specifications for the test to those registered education providers and the authors late last year. December, they started selling it. So they've had a couple of months to play around with their practice test. At this recording, February 3rd, 2011, I've seen no advertisements for any material that says this is based on new material that will be valid after the 31st of August. I'm really not sure how much you're going to see. Folks will try to sell some things here and there to try to make some money. So as I mentioned in the beginning, in the intro to this session, be aware of the source of your material. People are still selling version 3 PMBOK material out there. You can go to a website and buy a practice test, and only after you've plunked down however many Deutschmarks or dollars or RMBs, whatever, you find that it's version 3. Well, because you didn't read the fine print, or they didn't offer the fine print. There's a clue there. Don't buy something if they don't tell you the basis of what you're buying. It needs to say version 4 of the PMBOK, number 1, if you're buying it soon, before August 31st. And after August 31st, it wants to say version 4 of the PMBOK, and you want to make sure that it has the new RDS-compliant material in it as well. So pay attention to those types of things. And that's all you're going to do is see the questions worded and phrased and built a little differently. I don't think this is anything that's insurmountable to any of you intelligent folks out there. If you're sitting for the test, you know what you're doing. You know the material. So it's a slight difference in the way they ask the question. No big deal. Okay, with that, that's the end of what I was going to talk about today. I'm going to shut off the mute function so that you can ask questions, or you can do a star 6 while I'm getting to do that. Yeah, go right ahead.
I wanted to ask, if we fail the exam, how long do we have to get?
How long do you have to retest? Basically, once you are approved to take the test, you receive your notification letter that you're capable of taking the test, then you can have 3 attempts within a year to completely study and take the test. If you test within the second month, then you still have that year. They don't shortchange you at all.
And if I fail the first time, how long do I have to wait before I can try again?
There is no cooling off period, if you will. You could test the next day if you want to.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
There's no cooling off period at all. You can test immediately afterwards. Okay. Any other questions out there from anybody? Unmute your phone.
Now unmute it.
There we go. Very good.
Yeah, I saw a reference on one of the slides to John Wiley. What was that all about?
Well, John Wiley is my source of information when I'm doing a normal session of my monthly PMP exam study group. I base my material on a study guide put out in their CYBEX series. I use Kim Heldman's study guide, the 5th edition.
Yeah, I'm quite familiar with that. I work for John Wiley.
Oh, cool. Very nice. Well, I'm a registered instructor with you folks then, have been for several years.
Okay, very good.
They give me permission to use their material, and the only requirement is I have to use their logo, which is why you don't see the logo too much on this particular set of slides, because this doesn't have Wiley content in it.
Got it.
You certainly see Wiley stuff all over everything else. I think they are a very good value, if you will. You don't have to spend several hundred dollars for several hundred Deutschmarks, whatever your unit of currency is. You don't have to spend a lot of it to get the material. Normally between $40 and $60 U.S. for Kim Heldman's guide with a CD, with paper, and online practice tests. It's a very good value.
Very good.
Dana?
Let me ask you one other thing before I forget, then ask your question. The other good value that I'll mention, we like to try to help Cornelius Finkter out. And anybody who's looking for the 35 direct hours of training time, go to his PM PrepCast. For $99 U.S., you get a podcast that will qualify, that are valid for the 35 hours of classroom time as well. So you also don't have to spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for training material. You can go to that spot for that. Now, go ahead and ask your question. Sorry.
No problem. Let me. This is Rich Maltzman. Let me echo your endorsement of Cornelius Fichtner.
Hey, Rich.
His material is excellent.
Yeah.
My question is about translating the crosswalk document that has been provided to the registered education providers. This, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the registered education...
Give it a try, see what happens.
Yeah, they were given a document that shows kind of before and after, but it's extremely vague. It's your document, actually, is much clearer than what...
Is it really? Cool. Sometimes I get lucky.
But my question is this. Have you seen or can you imagine, let's stay with seen, any sample before and after questions that would help guide someone studying or someone who works in the REP area where we actually try to help students?
Yeah.
I would love to see a question, or 2 or 3 or 10, before and after. I mean, they can do all this theoretical stuff, but nothing really hits the mark like a
really
it doesn't have to
example.
Be an.
Yep.
Yeah, It doesn't have to be one that's going to be on the exam. It's just to more emphatically show what they mean by this change.
Yeah, and the short answer is no. I have not seen any of that. Yeah. I'd love to, but as I mentioned, they've only released that stuff. Correct me if I'm wrong. You travel in better circles than I do since, you know, with REP stuff. Is that was all sent out in November, December.
So, that's correct.
Folks are still messing with it, and I've seen nothing come out. I'd love to get my hands on some myself because, you know, since you're the PMP study group, the exam class as well, you need this stuff and you want this stuff. And I've not seen any of it.
So just to wrap up and just to help me understand and hopefully help others understand, if you're an REP, the best you can do is to understand that any of the questions you had that were devoted or dedicated to ethics or social responsibility will not exist. So you need to pull those out of your bank of test questions, and you need to work in the same intent into a question, let's say, on execution or initiation.
Yeah, that's my interpretation of the way I read all of the stuff that I'm able to get my hands on over the past couple of months as I was developing this material here.
I
tried a couple different providers, and nobody has got any yet.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Well, no problem, Rich. Thanks for joining. Any other questions out there?
Yeah, Rich, I assume your presentation is available to download for people who participated on the call?
Yeah, Dana's presentation, it absolutely is. If you go to, if you happen to be sitting in the Free C conference call area, it's in the lobby. Look on the lobby area and you'll see it there. If you're not, then just go over to Yahoo Groups. We have a Yahoo group, happens to be right on the slide that happens to be showing right now. I back things up to slide one. Go to Yahoo Groups. If you're not a member, join. Our group is PM Lessons Learned, and in the file area, you'll find it. Also, go to www.pmlessonslearned.com. You'll look over in the left-hand navigation column for the files and presentations link, and you'll see all that same stuff that'll get you down through the bowels of Yahoo at the moment, and you can grab both the presentations, and there's a link for all the podcasts for those who don't want to go to iTunes. For the podcast, you can download them directly from the Internet Archive and then grab them there as well.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
Dale, it's Annette.
Hi, Annette.
I get my study group participants to purchase Heldman's book. That's what we've been using. Now, ideally, it would be nice for her to provide a download for the updated sample questions once she gets her new lot sorted out. Can you actually see anyone changing their textbooks greatly, or is it more just the sample questions and test banks that we can buy that will be changing?
I think it's the latter myself, because the exam will still be based on PMBOK version 4. And Rich or anyone else who does a study group, feel free to speak up as well. But since the base isn't changing, it's just that batch of questions. And I know that John Wiley provides updates to at least their website anyway. You can go to their website if you bought the book and download erratas and things. And some of the other providers do exactly the same thing, some better than others. But if you've already bought their book, I would hope they would put out some erratas or at least some of the examples like Rich was talking about, even if it's not, you know, a huge number. You know, 4 or 5, as Rich was saying, would be a good enough sample to show the before and after. And maybe as we get closer to August, we'll see some of those, and we'll be able to post them, maybe have even another session. That's what I think they'd wind up doing in it.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
I believe John Wiley is definitely doing that for sure.
Good. Okay, so you heard it right from the publisher, so to speak. So that, like,
wish I was the publisher.
Yeah, don't we all? Yeah.
The project manager.
There you go. That works. That works. Folks do a good job.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. Any other questions out there? All right. Let me run through my outro then, and then I'll stop the recording, and then we will see what other questions generically might be out there as well. So give me 2 minutes to go through my outro. As a reminder, PM Lessons Learned conducts 3 conference calls each month. This is the monthly PMP exam study group call and podcast that we're on right now. It occurs on the first Thursday of each month. On the second Thursday of each month, we have the PM Lessons Learned Job Shop call for folks in transition or with a need to identify a potential career path or something like that can go to help each other. And finally, on the third Thursday of each month, we hold our PM Lessons Learned Best Practices Conference Call. This call provides presentations on a wide variety of project management and soft skills topics, like the one coming up in a couple of weeks, is the author of Version 1 of the PMBOK. Bill Duncan is going to be presenting the work breakdown structure. Bill Duncan will be doing two presentations for us in the coming months. So join that third Thursday of the month to hear the original author of the PMBOK and his interpretation of what's going on. Okay, so that's it for this session of the PM Lessons Learned's monthly PMP exam study group conference call and podcast. I'll again thank the live participants on this conference call and everybody that downloads the podcast. Speaking of the podcast, over the past 2 years that I've been doing these sessions, you folks have done over 12,000 downloads of this monthly PM Lessons Learned PMP Exam Study Group podcast. So I really, really thank you for all that support. 12,000 downloads is absolutely huge. I'll remind you that we are PMLessonsLearned.com, Project Managers Helping Project Managers to Make a Difference. My name is Dana Safford. So long and keep on learning.
Thank you, Dan.
This has been a PM Lessons Learned podcast. Project Managers, helping project managers by sharing lessons learned. Come join our group. Visit our website at pmlessonslearned.com. Till next time, keep on learning.